KSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, August 14th, 2026. I'm your host, Nick Seabrook. Rabble.ca shares the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. Back in April of this year, Rabble Radio shared a special soundscape episode inspired by Earth Day. All the staff here at Rabble recorded bits of audio of the nature that surrounded them, and it made for what I feel was a very beautiful little tribute to the Earth. But that's not the only time that we've talked about soundscapes on the show. In August 2016, then Rabble Radio host Victoria Fenner presented an episode entitled Acoustic Ecology and the Art of Listening. The episode celebrated World Listening Day and featured interviews from different audio artists, as well as a piece of audio Fenner created herself. We'd like to share that with you today. From 2016, here's that episode. Take a listen.
Well, World Listening Day is something that I've known about for quite a few years, and so have the other people in the tribe of listeners who also call themselves acoustic ecologists. Acoustic ecology is not a lot different than ecology having to do with water pollution and air pollution. It's just that we can't see and touch it. So it's kind of a branch of the environmental movement that doesn't get a lot of attention. Now, the reason why July 18th is World Listening Day is because it's the birthday of Armory Schaeffer. Armory Schaeffer is a Canadian composer who has done a lot of work to establish acoustic ecology as a practice. I first learned about his work when I was in Vancouver in the early 1980s. In the 1970s, he had pioneered a project called the World Soundscape Project, which documented the sounds of the world around us. And many of those sounds now don't exist anymore. There are things that have just disappeared. Those early recordings from the World Soundscape Project in the mid-1970s still exist at Simon Fraser University. And over the years, many, many, many people have been reading Murray Schaeffer's works, and they've been following his practices and documenting the sounds around us. So the movement has continued to grow. So my first interview is going to be with one of those people who has been doing listening and acoustic ecology and soundscape composition for a lot of years. Darren Copeland is his name, and he's the artistic director of an organization called New Adventures in Sound Art. And I was one of the participants in an event which NASA held at the Canadian Music Centre in Toronto. And first of all, before the performance began, I had a chance to talk to Darren about just what acoustic ecology is and what was going on at the Canadian Music Centre that night.
I think that our culture is gotten so engaged in the visual that we forget that the auditory impact of our lives and the lives on the other organisms that we share the earth with, and that when we design our technology and vehicles and things that we use, the sounds that they make need to be considered, and considered not just for our function, but the impact that they have on the rest of the environment.
What are the sounds we're hearing in the background here?
These are sounds from a website called apari.org, and it's a world sound map of soundscapes recorded by many people from around the world and on their travels.
I can see from the map here that we're right by the ocean, and so that is the sound of the surf, I'm sure, in where?
I believe it's Indonesia, right, Ed?
Darwin, Australia.
He moved on me.
Okay. And where is this website?
It's called apori.org, apore.org, and it's made by a person in Germany called Udo Noll. and it's quite extensive with sounds from every continent and quite, I wouldn't say exactly evenly distributed, but it's quite remarkable that there isn't very many sparse places. What little piece of island is that?
Yes, we're looking at the map here. So we're over on the coast of Africa. So what about Canadian contributions? You've got a couple of your own sounds there, right?
I did manage to contribute some moose to it, but I need to do more.
Moose?
Yeah. Some moose that were near my place that they were during mating season in October, and they were calling to be, calling out. So we got, and also just their movements in the bush. They're quite loud creatures when they walk around in the woods. So, you know, they're snapping twigs and eating branches and things. So they make a lot of noise when they're walking around.
Isn't it kind of dangerous to disturb moose while they're mating?
Well, I was up on a balcony, so I was pretty free. Unless they grew wings, I was pretty safe.
I just had to ask, but anyway. So tonight we're at the Canadian Music.
That was a moose foyer.
Darren, one thing I wanted to ask you about is now there's this term acoustic ecology, and I try to tell people that sound is something which should be taken as seriously as air pollution, water pollution, and everything like that. But yet at the same time, the acoustics, you know, acoustic ecology doesn't seem to be well understood by the environmental movement as a discipline for serious study. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's just we're not educated about listening to sound and thinking about that aspect and orienting ourselves through sound. We're too busy sizing up things visually to spend the time, and because listening takes time, it's not an instantaneous thing that you can just hear something and know what it is. It takes time to understand it, and you know, you can have to invest yourself in it. It's, you know, just like music doesn't happen in 1 second, it happens in 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, hours, whatever. So it's being immersed in a different event horizon than we're used to. That's partly it, but it, at the same time, it does lead to a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety that is under the surface that people don't realize, that it's just the fact that they're in a loud restaurant or there's a lot of car noise that's masking their voices and they can't hear each other or something of that nature. So that's getting in the way of people enjoying or experiencing something.
Right. So sound, I mean, there is sound pollution just as there's water pollution, just as there's air pollution. And so that's one thing that that acoustic ecology is concerned with. But just before I go to let you get set up for your concert, can you tell me your favorite sound in the world? And first of all, your least favorite sound in the world, and then your best favorite sound. Favorite sound in the world.
Oh, geez, I don't know. Well, lately I've gotten fond of the ruffed grouse, which is a kind of partridge, grouse bird that has a big tail that it and wings that it flaps that make...
You flap your wings very well in imitation of the ruffed grouse there, Darren. Okay, but, so that's your favorite sound. What about your least favorite sound?
Least favorite sound? Well, probably the automobile, because it's because of the masking properties and highways in particular. And in Toronto, it's a real tragedy that our highways run through natural areas like the Humber Valley and the Don Valley. It's completely, takes away a lot of the potential beauty that's there. The chance for quiet there is really marred by the presence of the highway.
And that was Darren Copeland, who's the Artistic Director of New Adventures in Sound Art, a Toronto-based organization that has been doing sound art and listening and all kinds of creative projects having to do with sound for about 15 years now. So thanks to Darren for that. And here's a little sample of the piece that I did at the Canadian Music Centre performance. In 1982, I was on a bus going out to Vancouver, and I had a little FM transistor radio, a Sony TC-110, and I grabbed the sound of radio stations across the country. And it's the original piece is about 28 minutes long. Radio has changed an awful lot since 1982, and so what the original piece is a good capsule of what radio was about at that point in time. So the instructions for the commission for last for July 16th was to take sounds from a couple of apps. One is called Lost and Found Sound, which is an app which is created by David Jansenius in Kitchener-Waterloo. Can be found on your iPad and for your iPhone. Not sure about Android. And also another website called Radio Apori, www.aporee.org. And so the instructions were to find sounds from those particular apps and build them in. So what I did was created this audio map of Canada circa 1982, what things were sounding like on the radio, on the bus, and also life outside the bus. So here is Station Break.
WXYZ Detroit.
Let the Detroit Red Wings and Chicago Blackhawks help close out your 1982.
To get it done right.
Good morning. It's 8:30, minus 5 degrees and cloudy in Sudbury.
Prime Minister Trudeau left Ottawa today for an 18-day Asian tour. Accompanying the Prime Minister is his 9-year-old son, Sasha. On Tuesday, Trudeau will make his first official stop in Bangkok, Thailand. Trudeau is trying to promote Canadian exports to that area.
Rock and roll on stage at the back door in Sioux, Michigan.
Not available in Ontario.
Today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell.
The bishops suggest an alternative industrial strategy for Canada, one that emphasizes labor-intensive projects over capital-intensive industries.
The Polish news agency says the martial law crackdown began in Poland in December of 1981. Will be suspended at midnight tonight.
Trade unions have their first working day tomorrow with little apparent support from the workers. These unions were formed to fill the gap left by the banning of the Solidarity Union.
Winnipeg AccuWeather is next.
More evidence in how deeply the recession is affecting the Canadian economy comes from Statistics Canada.
General boys down on the street smoking a stick.
We also are asking people to write the federal government.
An inquiry into why Britain was caught off guard by Argentina's capture of the Falkland Islands is complete, and Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher is studying its conclusions.
Be all that you can be.
See your Army recruiter today.
The possibility of seizing a nuclear warhead is a concern at 59 NATO nuclear deposit sites in seven countries.
8 months ago, it looked like so much electronic spaghetti. Now you can read the wiring like a roadmap, and you spotted the malfunction a mile away. You're 21 Lima, Pershing Electronics Repairer.
73, Regina.
And that was an excerpt from Station Break, which is a piece which me, Victoria Fenner, I created for World Listening Day. And it premiered in Toronto at the Canadian Music Centre on the 16th of July, just 2 days before World Listening Day. Well, another project which has been happening is a audio postcards project by the Canadian Association for Sound Ecology. The Canadian Association for Sound Ecology, CASE for short, launched a call for audio postcards. And they have an exhibit online and which you can check out. The URL is audiopostcards.soundecology.ca. So you might want to go to that website and just take a look around while you're listening to this next interview. Hildegard Westerkamp has been one of the most influential people in the development of the soundscape practice and theory, not just here in Canada, but also in the entire world. So now here is an excerpt from an interview done by Andrea Dancer, who is the president of the Canadian Association of Sound Ecology, with Hildegard Westerkamp.
Hildy, you're talking about the sped-up, hectic world where everything is in a short attention span. And ironically, these are short 1 to 2 minute audio pieces. What was your thinking when you were first approached with the idea of the audio postcard?
It's a good question. You asked me to write an introduction for this project, and my first reaction was sort of like, I don't really like these kinds of short pieces that have become a bit fashionable. There are a lot of competitions or invitations for 1 minute pieces, 30 second pieces, 2 minute, 3 minute pieces. And from my experience as a soundscape composer, and also the experience with working with Murray Schaefer and the World Soundscape Project, one of the things that we used to do is just listen for long times to the environment, immerse ourselves into the soundscapes. In other words, long stretches of time became a really important thing to experience. Very special to give yourself time to listen to the environment like that. And of course, sound walks do exactly that. They invite you to listen for longer times. And the point is that the longer you listen, the more you get immersed. So thinking of 2 minute audio postcards from a vast country like Canada seemed, I don't know, I can't find the word. I just found it rather ironic, yes, and contradictory. And I really had to bring my mind into a positive mind space for listening to these and thinking, okay, here are people who have, we had, what was it, 80 submissions or something, mm-hmm. who spend all this time going out recording and then trying to reduce those or compose these recordings they made into these little small jewels of sound. So I was thinking more of the process of recording and really wanted to honor that. And as I then was writing the introductions, I realized, okay, this is for the internet, it's perhaps something that is totally appropriate for this medium in which this online exhibition is going to be happening. And the listener will bring his or her own listening interests and skills into it. And And then I began to listen to the pieces after all these thoughts and became completely enthusiastic about what they had done and really was immersed into the process of what people wanted to say about the soundscape that they were recording, about the place, about the history, about the whole context, or about the recording experience itself. So the pieces that were selected, all of them, are really giving a strong sense of that intense experience of getting involved with the soundscape and the recording of it, and then with presenting it in 2 minutes. In the end, to me, it suddenly didn't matter anymore how long it was. I feel that all the contributors did a marvelous job in extracting a tiny little snippet of Canada. And indeed, some of them are truly Canada, right? And combined, the 16s together combined, give us a sense of the country and the locations from where these came. So I was kind of happy in the end that you challenged me to write the introduction for this project, because it became an involved project in itself for everybody.
And that was soundscape composer Hildegard Westerkamp in conversation with Andrea Dancer, who is the president of the Canadian Association of Sound Ecology. If you'd like to take a look and to listen to some of the audio postcards, and I know you would like to, you can go to audiopostcards.soundecology.ca. So you've been listening to a program on acoustic ecology, and which is a fancy way of saying listening to the environment around you. So in celebration of World Listening Day, which was July 18th of 2016, and presumably will be again July 18th of 2017 and 18 and the years to come. So instead of the Rabble theme, which I usually play at the end of the show, what I'm going to do is play some of my favorite sounds. Why don't you go out for a walk and listen and just ask yourself, what kinds of sounds do I want in my world? What kinds of sounds do I wish would go away? And how do all of the sounds around me affect my way of living and being in this world? You've been listening to Rabble Radio, a production of Rabble.ca. I'm Victoria Fenner. Thanks for listening.
That was a clip from a Rabble Radio episode from 2016. To listen to the full original program, visit the link in the show notes of this episode. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. This week's In Case You Missed It is presented by Piper Caniff. Take it away, Piper.
Starting this week in national news, on July 24th, the federal government announced that jets on the Toronto Island Airport were, quote, off the table at this time, end quote. This represents a major victory for the activist group No Jets TO and their supporters. This decision followed months of campaigning after Ontario Premier Doug Ford announced a plan to expand the airport to fit several jets, even projecting at least 10 million passengers a year. If the plan went forward, much of the public park on the island would be given over to private developers and paved to make space for new runways and parking lots. Toronto Star columnist Matt Elliott gave his opinion on Ford's plan plainly. Quote, to call it half-baked would be an insult to baked goods. In the labor news front, a recent wrongful denial of remote work exposes the shortcomings of what happens with a blanket return to office mandates. On June 19th, it was decided by the Federal Public Sector Labor Relations and Employment Board that a federal worker was wrongfully denied a request to work remotely. The employee in question worked from home as a result of ongoing post-traumatic stress disorder. The employee's therapist argued that being forced to return in the office would damage their recovery and was unfair, as they could perform all of their work tasks from home with reasonable accommodations. The federal government has granted $28,000 in damages to the employee. The Profession Institute of the Public Service of Canada, or PIPSC, has been fighting for a more flexible, hybridized formatting for workers who may need to shift their hours more online and work remotely from the comfort of their home for their safety. This will also help to reduce costs around the office, since the employees working remotely will no longer require certain expensive office equipment. Quote, "My real hope is that this is an eye-opener, first and foremost for the employer, to realize that they need to rethink this mandate," said PIPSC President Sean O'Reilly in an interview with Rabble.ca. Quote, "I think there's other cases in the pipeline, filed by our members, that will eventually reach the commission," end quote. A hybridized format for these remote office workers will also allow them to drop in and perform on-site work if needed, and employ a more diverse group of workers at the office. In feminism and queer news, the phobia and stigmatization of asexuality, known colloquially as acephobia, is inherently tied to feminism, as explained by Rabble's own Piper Caniff. Asexual hate shows up in our society in a myriad of ways, from constant invalidations and microaggressions about whether asexuality is real or they just haven't found the right person, to a lack of institutional protection allowing marriages to be annulled due to lack of consummation, to the bioessentialist belief that asexuality is not human nature. Caniff argues that prejudice against asexuality actually stems from patriarchal beliefs. 63% of the asexual community identifies as women, while 26% identify as non-binary, and around 11% identify as men. This significant representation likely stems from socialization, with girls and women being told contradictory narratives about sex from an early age and having the societal expectation to be less sexual than men in the first place, thus making a discovery of asexuality easier. Under the patriarchy, everyone is expected to succumb to the nuclear family structure, which views sex and coupling as essential to a happy, healthy lifestyle. Asexuality disrupts this narrative and prompts us to rethink the limits of what relationship and family structures can look like. And with patriarchal rape culture, sex is not only viewed as essential, but something owed. In a similar way to men expecting sex from women, allosexuals, or non-asexuals, expect sex from aces. This leads to sexual assault by coercion and force, and also instances of corrective sexual assault, where the perpetrator intends to convert the victim from one sexuality to another. In the case of both asexuals and women, their desires and their word are not taken seriously. In the end, acephobia majorly stems from the patriarchal way that many people view their sexuality and bodily autonomy, and accepting if oneself is on the ace spectrum should never be a negative thing. If you're interested in stories like this and other news, please visit rabble.ca.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks so much for listening. To help support our show further, consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. You can also choose to subscribe to us over on Patreon for special bonus content of Rabble Radio. If you're already subscribed, consider making a donation to rabble.ca at rabble.ca/donate. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nuremberg for supplying the music to this episode. I'm Nick Seabrook, and we'll talk to you next time.